Boardman's features seemed to soften, and a light came into his eyes as though he were talking more to himself than to me. The old house was different then. A housekeeper and six servants there were, and everything just so. And a full-time gardener? There weren't a blade of grass out of place in them days, and the flowers all in rows and the trees pruned tidy-like. And this yard, it were Tau Doctor's favourite spot. He'd come and look over the door at me, sitting here polishing the harness and past time of day, quiet-like. He were a real gentleman, but you couldn't cross him. A few specks of dust anywhere down here and he'd go nearly mad. But the war finished it all. Everybody's rushing about now. They don't care about them things now. They've no time. No time at all. He would look round in disbelief at the overgrown cobbles, the peeling garage doors hanging crazily on their hinges, at the empty stable and the pump from which no water flowed. He was always friendly with me in an absent way, but with Siegfried he seemed to step back into his former character, holding himself up smartly and saying, "Very good, sir," and saluting repeatedly with one finger. It was as though he recognised something there, something of the strength and authority of Tau Doctor, and reached out eagerly towards the lost days. "Morning, Boardman," I said as I opened the garage door. "How are you today?" "Oh, middling, lad. Just middling." He limped across and watched me get the starting handle and begin the next part of the daily routine. The car allotted to me was a tiny Austin of an almost forgotten vintage, and one of Boardman's voluntary duties was turning it off when it wouldn't start. But this morning, surprisingly, the engine coughed into life after six turns. As I drove round the corner of the back lane, I had the feeling, as I did every morning, that this was where things really got started. The problems and pressures of my job were waiting for me out there, and at the moment I seemed to have plenty. I had arrived in the Dales, I felt, at a bad time. The farmers, after a generation of neglect, had seen the coming of a prophet, the wonderful new vet, Mr. Farnan. He appeared like a comet trailing his new ideas in his wake. He was able, energetic, and charming, and they received him as a maiden would her lover. And now, at the height of the honeymoon, I had to push my way into the act, and I just wasn't wanted. I was beginning to get used to the questions. "Where's Mr. Farnan? Is he ill or something? I expected Mr. Farnan." It was a bit daunting to watch their faces fall when they saw me walking onto their farms. Usually they looked past me hopefully, and some even went and peered into the car to see if the man they really wanted was hiding in there. And it was uphill work examining an animal when its owner was chafing in the background, wishing with all his heart that I was somebody else. But I had to admit that they were fair. I got no effusive welcomes, and when I started to tell them what I thought about the case, they listened with open scepticism. But I found that if I got my jacket off and really worked at the job, they began to thaw a little. And they were hospitable. Even though they were disappointed at having me, they asked me into their homes. "Come in and have a bit of dinner," was a phrase I heard nearly every day. Sometimes I was glad to accept, and I ate some memorable meals with them. Often, too, they would slip half a dozen eggs or a pound of butter into the car as I was leaving. This hospitality was traditional in the Dales, and I knew they would probably do the same for any visitor. But it showed the core of friendliness which lay under the often unsmiling surface of these people, and it helped. I was beginning to learn about the farmers, and what I found, I liked. They had a toughness and a philosophical attitude which was new to me. Misfortunes, which would make the city dweller want to bang his head against the wall, were shrugged off with, "Ah, well, these things happen." It looked like being another hot day, and I wound down the car windows as far as they would go. I was on my way to do a tuberculin test. The national scheme was beginning to make its first impact in the Dales, and the more progressive farmers were asking for survey tests. And this was no ordinary herd. Mr. Copfield's Galloway cattle were famous in their way. Siegfried had told me about them. "The toughest lot in this practice. There's 85 of them, and none has ever been tied up. In fact, they've scarcely been touched by hand. They live out on the fells, they calve and rear their calves outside. It isn't often anybody goes near them, so they're practically wild animals. What do you do when there's anything wrong with them? I'd ask. Well, you have to depend on Frank and George. They're the two Cotfield sons. They've been reared with those cattle since they were babies. Started tackling the little calves as soon as they could walk, then worked up to the big ones. They're about as tough as the Galloways.